I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to What It Takes. Today's guest brings us right into one of the most important and, let's be honest, most stressful parts of building a business, and that's the financials. And we're joined today by Gregory Vetter, co-founder of Tessemes, now CEO of Alta Fresh Foods and founder of Homegrown Brands. Greg helped make a family recipe from the fridge to national shelves, launching the number one organic salad dressing brand in the refrigerated space. But the reason I say we're jumping into financials is what makes his story powerful is everything he had to learn about money along the way, from bootstrapping to raising capital, navigating partnerships, ultimately declaring Chapter 11 bankruptcy to get his freedom and his life back. And he shares all of it in his brutally honest, surprisingly funny book, Undressed. I laughed out loud more than once, not because it's a comedy per se, but because it's just so true. If you've built a business, you'll see yourself in these pages in this story. Like I did. So today, Greg runs Alta Fresh Foods, which just won Sam's Club Supplier of the Year, if I heard correctly. And through Homegrown Brands, he's mentoring the next generation of founders on how to grow smarter and not harder. This episode is about what it really costs financially and emotionally to build something real. And you can do it, and also what you can do to avoid learning those lessons the hard way. So Greg will talk about some of those things. Let's get into it. Greg, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, okay, I'm just going to start with Undressed because I told you I got a copy. Oh, I have it right here. I have a copy of the book and I read it ahead of time. You broke the financial story into a series of money quests. It was like money quest take one, all the way up to like take seven, right? What made you tell it that way? Like, how was your relationship with money? How has that evolved from quest, you know, one to now what you're doing today in your businesses today?
I mean, it hardens you for sure. I think in the beginning, when you're an entrepreneur, you're building stuff, nobody believes your idea is good, or they don't believe in you, or they don't believe in the future growth prospects. And so you're so excited if somebody goes, yeah, I'll give you money. You're like, oh my God, I'll take it at any terms. This is the greatest day of my life. And I remember, you know, this used to be a trend. It would be entrepreneurs would be on LinkedIn and they'd be like, just raise $20 million and everyone's 1,000 likes. Oh my God, you're so wonderful. This is going to be so great for you. But on the backside, it's like, well, what did that cost you? What did you lose? Who was the partner? What does the future look like? And in the beginning stages, you don't think about anything. You just think about keeping the journey moving forward. And so as we built a company from literally one grocery store to every grocery store in America, you learn this insane journey and these different levels of fundraising and the different types of investors at each level and what their expectations are and how the board evolves. And just you keep entering into a different, maybe you start off in a shark tank, but you end up in like a dragon's den. And, you know, there is no real safe way to do that outside of just using your own money at the end of the day. So the quests were exactly that. I mean, it was Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. You had to go through the depths of hell and then you had to be tested all the way back up. And then you come back and you're like, I've done it. I'm never going to have to do this again. And then a year later, you know, there's a global supply chain crisis or there's COVID or there's an investor coup and you're like, oh man, how do I get out of this one?
Yeah. And I loved that journey. And even though like I could, you did a really good job of kind of like preempting that this was going to come back to bite you later. You're like, yeah. And then you just kind of leave it there. And I'm like, oh no, like I knew I was going to have to read about it later. And then I read it and I'm like, oh, I know what that's like, but you're right. It's whatever the next thing is. And so there's a scene that I can't forget. standing in the storage unit, ankle deep in oil, watching your money literally spilled all over the floor. First of all, you can tell everybody about that, but what did that moment teach you about financial resilience and leadership? Because you kind of responded differently than, you know, your brothers or what, like you were laughing and I was like, oh yeah, like I totally would have been laughing too. But also it wasn't because it was funny. It's just like, what else do? You got to find how you're going to get through it. And you guys did. So let me leave that story to you.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. And I think the entire aspect of money, when you go from a regular person to running a business with payroll and buying bulk materials and ordering trucks, it completely changes your perspective of kind of a dollar, what it takes to make a dollar, this whole kind of spoilage or damage or in produce, it's called shrink, where things, you know, become rotten. And so you always have to build in a period or a percentage of shit's going to hit the fan and it's going to be a lot of money. And you're going to have to keep your eye on the prize and continue to look through your windshield and not the rearview mirror. Because if you do that, I mean, you're going to get into a crash and then you really are going to be crying. You're not going to be laughing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So just to give our listeners some context, they bought these, however many pound drums of oil. 55
pound drums. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 55 gallons of oil that they finally got to the point where they could order that and excited about it, putting it into a storage unit, and it just leaked all over.
Yeah. It knocked. Somehow it fell over. We got a call from the storage unit manager and he goes, hey, I think there's a leak in your storage unit. And we didn't tell anybody what was in there. And we go, yeah, I don't think it's us, you know? And he's like, there's 3 inches thick of oil across every storage unit in this building.
Oh.
And you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
And so we immediately drive over there. We can't walk. We're falling all over the place. We have to clean it up. We don't want anybody else coming in. We don't want anybody calling anybody. So we just immediately start going into cleanup mode. We end up buying like hundreds of pounds of kitty litter to like put it all over to absorb everything. We're shoveling it up with snow shovels. And it was thousands of dollars.
It
was thousands of dollars we didn't have at that point. But again, it really made you focus on the efficiencies of everything. And you cannot half-ass any part of growth. And there's that venture saying, which it's like, move fast and break things. That's great in theory. It's not great when you have to clean it up with kitty litter. And so it really made us kind of rethink and regroup how we were going to be making everything moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as long as you learn from it too, I think that's the big step is there wasn't really, you know, multiple times where you had to do that. I mean, obviously there was definitely oil problems in the future, but you knew what to do. You knew how to handle things. Obviously, having it happen again is really frustrating. But for the most part, everything else was like, oh, okay, like we're gonna fail forward. We're gonna learn from this and take from that. And I think one of those things that stood out that I also loved that I see is you admitted that landing those big magazine features was much more about like ego than it was sales and all that kind of stuff. So looking back, what's your advice to somebody trying to build hype versus building something sustainable?
Hype is ego. I mean, and I think the problem when you're young and you're inexperienced is you think everything's a silver bullet. You go, well, if I can just be on the cover of this magazine, then I'm going to be able to leverage that to retailers and they're really going to care and they're going to bring me in. They don't care. And, you know, so like we're winning awards, we're in magazines. The only thing we got out of it was people cold calling us for, you know, copier sales or, you know, better shipping rates or something like that. There was never a silver bullet where we had won a thing or there was an article written about us And somehow that was this beautiful moment where everything started working. And it was this kind of dramatic moment of disappointment where you're like, I thought that if I won Entrepreneur of the Year, that was going to mean something big. And it didn't. It was it's not all make believe. That's not really true, but it's not what you think it is at all.
Yeah, it never pans out the way that you think it does. Like, you know, and you guys talked about trade shows and everything. I was laughing at all that too, because you go in with your trade show strategy and you have a plan and who you're going to talk to, who you want to land, da da da. And it's some random dude that you meet at some bar who's like, oh, like we got this like VIP thing, like let's go. And then they introduce you to somebody and then it turns into something. I'm like, that's exactly how it happens. It's never what you think it is. It's never, you know, it's never. And you even said, too, after you guys had that big magazine thing, I think it was like Inc. magazine or something like that. You're like, yeah, like we got this big call for this big deal. And we're like, oh, did you hear? And they're like, no, we didn't read that. We didn't.
Right.
And I'm like,
you must have seen us in Inc. magazine. They're like,
no.
Oh, no. We're walking in a grocery store and saw you on the shelf. And we're like,
yeah. Oh,
okay.
Okay.
All right. So literally, we got nothing out of this. Zero things.
I love that. I love that. Well, let's talk about Alta Fresh. What's the vision? How's the financial model different from your first company?
We don't have any investors. One, I think it's an interesting business. We basically figured out a way to eliminate food waste in large scale grocery stores and make the labor model really, really efficient for people assembling kind of salads in stores or meals in stores that are private label. So if you were to walk into a Sam's Club or a Costco and you buy a chicken Caesar salad for a family of four, we came up with a way to ship them a box that has exactly what they need in it, with containers, with instructions, all the exact amounts. And so they open one box. They don't have to have six different trucks coming with six different ingredients. One box comes, they open it, they assemble it, they throw the box away. There's no food waste. There's efficiency in labor. And so it really kind of opens retailers' eyes of how efficient something can be. It's not a sexy business like having, you know, a branded Tessie Mays, or we have a vodka business called Quenchers that's going to be in the Barstool Sports restaurants and NFL stadiums, you know, like, oh, wow, that's so sexy and fun. We're building brands. But like, this thing is profitable and methodically works and solves a problem. And so there's an interesting balance between building brands and then actually solving problems. And that's a really interesting journey to be on. And obviously, probably the most successful businesses do both. And so this has been a fun ride. We've owned it for a couple of years. It's going really well. And we're going to continue to try and expand the platform to everybody and anybody that wants to solve those problems.
Yeah. And winning Sam's Club Supplier of the Year, I mean, that's huge. Like we were just talking about winning Entrepreneur of the Year, but that is a really big deal. What did it take financially and operationally to scale to that level?
You really have to put them first. So I think a lot of people don't do that, right? You kind of want to put your business first at every single moment. If you put the customer first, and this is obviously a large scale customer, and you can live into the promises that you make, then you're already ahead of 99% of people. And I think radical transparency, over communication, and then putting the customer first will get you pretty far. It's not going to get you to the promised land, but you know, if you can do that day in and day out, you're going to be in a very good spot.
Yeah, those relationships are key, which also brings me to another thing I was laughing at when you were like, yeah, we were doing great. We're in all these stores. And then we got a new buyer.
Yeah.
So that was another laugh out loud moment for me, not because it was funny, but because I'm like, oh yeah, they like are basically the gatekeepers for the entire company. And so when you're working with big retailers, especially the buyer revolving door, I mean, that's real. Like I was like, that's at the point where I was reading, like, I wish I was highlighting and annotating, and because it is real. Like, that's a real problem. How do you financially plan around that uncertainty? You already talked about waste and shrinkage and, like, you know, other things that are happening in the food industry, but that's also in the retail side of things. There are people that are going to change everything for you in a snap of a finger.
Yeah. I mean, I think brand's really important in that world, because again, if you're in like a private label service world, that could just kind of be the end, unless you were providing some unbelievably special service for somebody. And then it's just diversification of revenue. You know, I think being okay with losing a customer if that relationship is not right, you know, that's easier said than done, especially if you're working with somebody big and they come in and they're like, hey, we don't like you. We're going to take $30 million from you today. That's a bad day.
Yeah.
That is a bad day. But in the grand scheme of things, I think just understanding the potential pitfalls and consequences of a concentration of your, you know, revenue or customer base in a single buyer, you know, that'll keep you up at night. And so the faster that you can grow or diversify that revenue or provide something that's unbelievably special, the better you're going to sleep.
Yeah. And I was like nervous for you reading in Undressed about, you know, you kept talking about the one, you know, we're in this one retail. And I'm like the whole time I was thinking that same thing, because it is a real thing. Like, you hear those, I guess they're old wives tales now, but putting all your eggs in one basket, it's real. And so you can't necessarily plan for your buyer to switch out and all of a sudden not like your product. That's not a financially, like, that strategy. How do you plan around that strategy? Well, like you said, it's diversification. You need to have different revenue streams and doing different things. And that was clearly a lesson that I know exactly where you learned it from.
Because
it happened. So what's the one mistake you made with money early on that you've determined not to repeat with all of your ventures now?
I think it was the excitement of being loved by investors.
I'm so glad you said that, because that is something that I don't think we've talked about even on this show. It's not something that we really even talk about with our clients or business owners and whatnot, because it's hard to call out and it's hard to admit even. So that, talk about that some more.
Yeah, I think, again, in the beginning, you're young, or I was young. And so I was young in the business world. And so everything was new. And so you're trying to figure out your way as a CEO. You're trying to figure out your way as a board member. You're trying to figure out your way as a leader of a brand and a company. And you have so many responsibilities. And so the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And so you're telling your company a story and you're communicating the energy and the passion behind it. You're not getting that from anybody else at all. And so you're like this beaten dog for so long that the first time somebody comes to you and goes, I've got a warm shelter for you and I'm going to give you treats, you're like, this is the greatest day of my life. And in reality, when you have that much emotion tied into someone believing in your brand or your company or your product, you're not thinking clearly. You choose to ignore the red flags. And so, you know, I have a great performance coach. His name's Dr. Jonathan Fader. And he always asks this one question, which is, what are you pretending to not know about the situation? And I think that's one of the greatest questions that you can ask. What are you pretending to not know about a person? What are you pretending to not know about a situation, an investor, a deal? And if you can remove yourself and take down your emotion and energy and kind of look at it in a very stoic light, it's going to give you the answer that you actually are looking for. You may not like the answer, which I did not like many times. And a couple of times I chose to ignore my gut and listen to my brain and heart. And I was royally fucked from it. But in these moments when you're kind of building stuff, you're waiting for validation and you're waiting for someone to go, dude, I've built these things. You're the next one. And you're like, I am, because I think I am. And they're like, you are. You're like, oh my God, I've been telling everybody I'm the next one. They're like, yeah, just give me everything. And then the next thing you know, you have nothing. So I do think it's that excitement of being loved or validated. It will get you into some very bad situations financially.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Because, and I think a lot of things were the same when I was reading all that. The only difference for me is I think that the emotions, I see them as part of my red flags. Like I'm able to feel one way, but like I definitely want to be liked. And I think a lot of people are like, I don't care what people think of me. I care. I absolutely care what people think of me. It doesn't change my behavior though.
Yeah.
It doesn't change what decisions I need to make. And I can make logical decisions even when I feel emotional about them. And so I just tend to use them as, okay, I'm feeling a kind of way about something. Let's lean into that and see. Instead of like bringing it down, I'm like, let me see why I feel so strongly about this and kind of break that apart. Like you said, I think I get to the same. I just have like a different process, but the answer's the same is, you know, what am I lying to myself about? What am I not looking at? Because everything that you saw, I feel like every time you were in those effed situations, you knew, you even were writing about it ahead of time. You're like, huh, I see that. And you're like, well, but we're just going to keep going. Right. And so obviously hindsight's 20/20 when you're writing about it. But I also know you absolutely saw it going into it, because I think in life we see these things, but we choose to either ignore or justify or whatever it is based on how you feel. And I think that board takeover leading to chapter 11, it's hard to even say out loud, but I love that that's like something that you felt like you needed to share with everybody. Like, hey, this was my biggest fear, and my biggest fear led to my biggest like victory, right? Like, or whatever it was, you said it led to your freedom. How did that part of your story reshape how you lead and live now?
Every fear that I've ever had all was exposed in the journey. And so when you no longer have any fears because they've already been exposed, you can approach the journey very differently. And I think Joseph Campbell has a wonderful quote: the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek.
Mm-hmm. That was it. Yeah.
And for me, I had to enter that cave of failure. And when I entered it, I figured out what I was capable of. And I figured out where I could be pushed and if I was going to break or not. And so now with these other ventures that I'm in, I don't want to be in bad situations. Obviously, nobody does. But when they happen, I approach them completely differently. Yeah. Where it's like, it's methodical, it's stoic, it's sociopathic sometimes, where you're just like, hey, man, I think you should be freaking out right now, and you're not. And it's like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
I know. I've been called out on that too. They're like, sometimes we just want you to be like freaking out with us. And they're like, you know, and the example that it was like somebody on my team, she's like, you know, I call you and I'm like, the building's on fire. And I'm like, okay, well, is everybody out? You know, did you call? Yes, everybody. Yes, we called 911. Like, are we stupid? Like, you know, and I'm like, well, what do you want from me then? Like, what do you... She's like, I just want you to, yeah. Like, I just want you to freak out. I'm like, well, what is that going to do? I need to make sure everybody's safe. I need to make sure we have a solution coming. We have help on the way. Like, okay, then like, Thanks for letting me know.
Appreciate it. Let me know how it goes.
Do you need me there? Okay. You know, so, but yeah, I think I'm going to wrap up here. And you wrote, and I'm paraphrasing, something to the effect of, I needed to understand the true and unfiltered journey of a bootstraps entrepreneurial dream, what it takes to stand strong in the middle of the storm, right? And so I was like, oh, we were meant to have this conversation, right, on this podcast. So Greg, you've been through the storm, you've come out on the other side. So as we wrap up, tell us about what it takes to stand strong in the middle of that business company storm that you were in.
It takes daily reminders. It takes a strong family foundation. It takes a complete dedication to your health. It takes God, which when I initially started, I think I believed in God, but I had not fully accepted, you know, the teachings of Jesus into my heart. He found me along the way. That completely shifted the perspective of where my journey's taking me and what it actually takes, because there's four things money can't buy, and these are the things that it takes to stand the storm. It's your health, your soul, your time, and your children's love. If you're in control of those four things in the middle of the storm, you can stay in there forever. And if you lose one of them, you're going to break. And that is what I learned getting pushed to the absolute limit. I always kept those four things with me and in check, and it allowed me to endure.
Oh, I love that. And I loved hearing about how you found your faith at the end too, especially because it was like you could do everything. You had the skill set, the know-how, the grit, you were like the problem solver. And then at the end, you were just like, yeah, and like I still couldn't do it all. And I think that's the whole point, right? Is like, we need him. Like, we need to rely on that. And I don't talk about that a whole lot on this podcast. It really isn't the theme of it. But I mean, that's a lot of my lessons learned, is I was blessed with these skills, but who gave them to me, right? And living that out is so much different. And there's a purpose behind all that. And I love how you said of that, the four things that it takes, money can't buy. So this conversation had it all: grit, grace, a financial reality check. I think that every business owner needs. Greg's story isn't about building a great brand. It's about what it costs to build something real, financially, emotionally, even legally. What I admire the most is how he used the hardest chapter of his life not as the end. It was the beginning. Like, it was the end of the book that I was reading, but I could tell this was the start of something new. And as you can see, now he's on to many other ventures and winning awards still, and awards that maybe make a bigger difference than just a magazine, you know, cover or title. Now with Alta Fresh Foods, you're doing things differently, smarter, leaner, with joy. And then homegrown brands, you're helping other entrepreneurs skip the landmines you had to walk through. I love that. So if you haven't read Undressed, here it is again. Go grab it. I found it hilarious, heartbreaking, completely relatable. And it's proof that when it comes to business, what looks like a loss might just be the thing that leads to your next best win. So Greg, if people are looking for you or your book or any of your other ventures, where can they find you?
GregoryVetter.com has kind of all my activities that I'm doing. I'm on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, all the stuff.
Yeah. And we can put all of that in our show notes as well. So thanks again, Greg, for sharing your story. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who's out there navigating their own money quest. We'll see you next time on What It Takes.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to SeekerSolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at SeekerSolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.